I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 23rd, 2026, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. Committee members present today: Senator Rauscher, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Myers, Senator Klayman, Vice Chair Senator Willikowski, and I am Chair Giesel. Senator Dunbar is excused. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and Chloe, who are keeping the minutes for us and running the audio. We have one presentation today, and that is on Alaska's interest in 8-Star, represented by Frank Richards, who is the President and CEO of the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. So, welcome, Mr. Richards. I would welcome you to the dais here, to the table, to present to us your PowerPoint. And we have lots of questions, I'm sure. Committee members, I would request that we wait till the end of each slide before asking questions. Okay, sounds good. Welcome, Mr. Richards.
Chair Giesel, thank you for having me. For the record, my name is Frank Richards. I'm the president of the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. And with the chair's indulgence, I would ask my colleague, Mr. Matt Kissinger, to be able to come to the podium as well and be able to participate in the presentation.
That would be great.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, Matt Kissinger from Anchorage, Alaska, Commercial Director for AGDC.
Very good. So as you exchange speakers, if you would identify yourself for the record, you know how to do all that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So for the audience, I wanted to provide just a little bit of background on AGDC. We are a state corporation that was created by the Alaska State Legislature with specific mission to be able to help the state of Alaska maximize the natural gas resources on Alaska's North Slope and to be able to develop the infrastructure necessary to bring that gas to not only local markets but also to the international markets. So the reason I start off this presentation is because we were provided in the enabling legislation specific duties, powers and duties that the legislature gave us to advance projects. And that has been the goal of this project, of this team, you know, since our inception back in original legislation was 2010 and then culminating in legislation in 2013 and 2014. But the goal is to be able to, again, this lifelong dream of bringing North Slope resources to market has been the mission that was given to us, and that's what we've been advancing in the interim years.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. I would just flesh that out with the statute, which talks about your responsibility to deliver natural gas in state for the maximum benefit of the people of the state, is what the statute reads. It goes on to require that when developing natural gas pipelines, Alaska LNG project and other transportation mechanisms to deliver natural gas provide economic benefits in the state and revenue to the state. Just a couple parts of that statute that you were referring to. Good thing for Alaskans to keep in mind as they take a look at the project. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Frank Richards. As we have advanced this project, we were originally working again on an in-state project, and then we're working with the producers on the concept of equity participation project with Exxon, BP, and ConocoPhillips. And then they exited the project, and we saw that we needed to move the project into a different commercial structure. And that came out in the 2016 hearings where Wood Mackenzie presented to the legislature that the project was burdened and economically challenged. And the goal, the recommendations coming out of Wood Mackenzie were that we change the project structure to make it more in line with what was then occurring on the U.S. Gulf Coast on LNG projects, which is looking at a tolling model and project finance. So that's what we did over the ensuing years, is change the structure of the project and ultimately work the project through the environmental process to get the permits necessary to construct the project through the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and all of the federal agencies. And then over the last few years, we were then looking to bring in a private sector developer to take on the ownership rights of this project. And on May 28th of last year, the board of directors made the decision to grant Glen Farm the rights to 75% of 8-Star Alaska. And 8-Star Alaska is was the subsidiary corporation where the assets that we call the Alaska LNG Project were placed by AGDC, because as a state corporation, we could not be we couldn't divest ourselves of the state's 100% ownership. So in the enabling legislation, it gave us the rights to create that subsidiary, and we created that and called it 8-Star Alaska. So we set that up and put all the permits, all the engineering, all the environmental data, as well as all the federal authorizations and all the rights of way granted to the project by the state of Alaska, as well as the federal government, including the National Park Service. And when we made this decision to grant Glen Farm the rights to lead this project, we started what was known as a transition period. And this is where AGDC's role as project manager at the time were going to be transitioned to Glen Farm. So we worked diligently to make sure that all of the assets were transferred from, and they had all the advantages of the management systems that we had built up, that they were then given those rights and ability to then use those management systems to execute the project. And we completed that transition on July 1st. So then after that, our roles really changed to one of a minority owner of 8-Star Alaska. In that role, we have a governance role. We have the rights to be able to observe their actions in advancing the project. We meet with them informally and discuss both commercial and technical work streams on a weekly basis or a daily basis. And then as a member of the 8-Star Board of Managers, we meet more formally on a quarterly basis. So that is the structure that we are currently in right now.
All right. I'll have you pause there. Are there any questions? All right. I'll let you proceed.
Madam Chair, I'll ask Mr. Kissinger to discuss the structure and governance.
All right. For the record, Matt Kissinger. I need to go to the next slide. Is that there? You go. So what is 8-Star? How did 8-Star come about? Why are we suddenly talking about 8-Star? We needed to bring in private investors into the project. That was our edict as far back as 2017 and 18. And so we needed to establish a vehicle by which to do that. Obviously, we can't sell to, you know, the private sector parts of AGDC because it's a, you know, public corporation of the state of Alaska. So we created 8-Star in order to facilitate that. And it stood there from 2018, and we've slowly added on to it. And I'll go through the evolution of this in the coming slides. But what it is it's a series LLC structure, actually, where you have a top co, and we call that, so at the very top of the project, you have 8-Star Alaska. And that's where we now have a 25%, and Glen Farm have the 75%, and Glen Farm are the managing member. Underneath that, you have three subsidiary companies. So that's 8-Star Arctic Carbon Capture, 8-Star Pipeline, and 8-Star LNG. And so that's where the money, that's where the capital will be raised at FID. And this is an important distinction. And it actually talks about the economics and how the developer economics flow. And again, I'll get onto that in the coming slides. So just setting the groundwork for that. It's not a public corporation. You know, it is there to move the project forward as a private sector project that AGDC as a state corporation just happens to own 25% of. And it's managed by the managing member, and that managing member is Glen Farm. And in a typical structure like this, Glen Farm have the powers to set strategic direction, execute the project, structure the capital, et cetera. And we have minority rights to check that and to ensure that we can abide by our state statutes, such as by maximizing the value to Alaskans through the project. Any questions on that?
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. 8-Star, so we gave 75% of the project to Glen Farm.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, that's correct. We gave 75% in exchange for them taking the project through to an FID.
And
follow up?
And we kept 25% through 8-Star.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, that's right. So we kept 25% of 8-Star Alaska.
Follow up.
Okay. So, but 8-Star, two of the four board member seats are Glenn Farn of 8-Star. Is that correct?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. Glenn Farn have two members. AGDC has one member, and one member was chosen to be the sort of public at-large member. So this is not reporting to the public, but they are an Alaskan who's independent, who has the necessary background to provide leadership to 8-Star. Correct.
Follow up.
So AGDC has one of the four seats on 8-Star of the 25%. So you effectively have zero control over the project. Is that fair to say?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, there are different ways to have control and influence in a corporation through the governance, and that's not just strictly through votes of the board. There are usually some provisions that require unanimous consent, and there are provisions that rely on the minority member to approve of. We have all of those in there.
So I'm going to follow up on that. Can we see that document? The document that says...
Chair Giesel, no, we're unable to share those agreements. Those agreements are confidential, and we'd need the permission of Glenn Farn to do that.
But if these are simply business agreements about the structure, what's the harm?
Chair Giesel, there's actually a tremendous amount of commercially sensitive information in an agreement like that. In fact, you would be exposing your weaknesses to competitors by providing an agreement like that to the public.
So redact that part, but give us the part that shows the governance structure.
Chair Giesel, we can take that back to our partner.
Well, I would appreciate you taking it back to your partner, and then I would like a reply with a justification why, with the sensitive material not with that being redacted, we cannot see how the structure is set up, who gets what votes, who holds the power. Because according to rough estimates, we've invested $1 billion in this project over the years, since about 2014 or so, and $750 million of that has been given away, three quarters, right? 75%.
Chair Giesel, I don't believe that you can value 8-Star on the basis of the sunk costs of 8-Star. So remember, the producers gave us 75% for free. And we just held on to that 75% as a currency to bring back in the private developers. When you think about our sunk costs are unlocking value on the midstream, but also value in the upstream, similar to the sunk costs that producers have in the project, which is also in the hundreds of millions, especially if you go back through the many iterations. So we have those sort of a blend of sunk costs, unlocking both upstream and midstream value.
I can understand why you would question whether the state of Alaska had put $1 billion into this, despite the fact that we have sort of a listing of those appropriations. But regardless, we're going back to that document. With the redacted, sensitive information, I am requesting that document. So thank you. Are there further questions on this slide? Senator Klayman.
I just want to go in a little more detail about the structure, because the slide notes you're not a public corporation, but then you talked about corporate law. But corporate law really doesn't have any place here, because this is not governed by corporation law. This is a limited liability company and not a corporation. Am I correct?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, what I was referring to is under a corporate structure or under an LLC structure, you have various ways of having governance and control, not just simply through the board membership. And in fact, it's even more common in an LLC structure, as I'm sure you're aware, to have these other types of control, such as minority approval rights.
Follow up, Senator Klayman.
So focusing in on a typical LLC structure, isn't the large measure of LLC agreements and the operating agreements, they largely say we're ignoring the statutes and this is the structure for this particular LLC. So we could read LLC statutes to our heart's content that would tell us nothing about the structure that exists for this LLC.
Senator Klayman, through the chair, I'd agree with that. In fact, I'd say that there are so many different ways you can structure that governance. It would be impossible to tell simply by saying that. I was replying to the specific question of the board makeup and how much control we have through the board makeup. And I was emphasizing that the control doesn't necessarily come through the votes of the board. In fact, a lot of the control as a minority shareholder in this in 8-Star Alaska is through those other mechanisms.
Follow-up, Senator Clayman.
But as a practical matter, we as the legislative body for Alaska that has a percentage ownership in this entity, we actually, it's impossible for us to know anything about how this is structured because right now this is a confidential operating agreement for the LLC and we're not allowed to see it.
Senator Clayman, through the chair, that's correct. That's the board of AGDC has seen those and we report to them and they set our direction.
Senator Clayman.
Nothing further at this point.
Thank you. Senator Kosoff.
Thanks. I'm just trying to figure out under the 75% ownership of this 8-Star, what do we actually own exactly?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, maybe the next slides.
Mr. Richards.
Sorry, for the record, Frank Richards. The next slide will help in terms of illustrating some of the ownership structure.
All right, before we leave this slide, any further questions on this slide? Seeing none. All right, we'll move on. This will be slide 5, I believe. Thank you.
Okay. On slide 5, sorry, Matt Kissinger for the record. On slide 5, you kind of see the evolution that I just talked about. So 2018, we stood up 8-Star Alaska LLC. That was, as I said, that was for the purpose of bringing in these investors. It also allows us to then, as you see in 2023, go towards the Series LLC structure where you have these subsidiaries underneath 8-Star Alaska, but each subsidiary can have different ownership structures. That was really important for a number of reasons. One, we have one FERC authorization. We have one DOE export authorization for non-free trade countries. These aren't spread between different sub-projects, and so this allows you a structure where the authorizations can be held at the parent company level. But then it also allows something that we are never really able to do with this project, which is selectively bring in investors for different parts of it and start bringing in, you know, the top pipeline construction companies as they want to invest, or people who have an appetite more for LNG exposure than pipeline exposure might want to invest just in the LNG plant. So it provided us with a lot of flexibility, especially as we went down the phasing route where you were going to be doing the pipeline first. By 2025, then, as you know, we sold 75% of Glenfarne or of 8-Star Alaska to Glenfarne Alaska LNG LLC. Again, that was an exchange for taking the project through to FID. This was explained in at least 2 years worth of board meetings at AGDC where we mentioned we've got 75% of the project that we're trying to find someone to come in and carry it to FID for. And it took us a very long time to find someone to do that. And ultimately, it was the phasing that unlocked that. So by 2025, that's the structure. So I'll go on to the next. Well, any questions on that slide? Sorry.
Questions?
Yeah.
Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Back to the question about what we actually own as a state through AGDC based on this graphic now.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, so we own 25% of 8-Star Alaska LLC. Glenfarne owns 75% of it. Then 8-Star Alaska then owns 100% of each of these sub-projects. And this is important because on the next slide, I'm going to talk about the next evolution, what happens next, and kind of what the flow of funds will begin to look like. And there's a lot that we can't tell you right now, and it's not because it's secret. It's because we don't know the answers, and I'll explain why we don't know the answers as well.
Senator Kawasaki?
To follow up, then, what do we own 25% of 8-Star ACC, 8-Star Pipeline, and 8-Star LNG?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, no. 8-Star Alaska owns 100% of those, and we own 25% of 8-Star Alaska. We do have preferential rights to back into investments in each of those that I'll talk about next as well.
So
follow up.
So we don't own 25% of an equity in 8-Star LLC. We just own 25% of the paper of 8-Star LLC.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. No, we own 25% of the equity in 8-Star Alaska LLC.
Okay.
Senator Wilikowski.
What is the value of 8-Star Alaska? How much do we own? What is the value of what we own and what Glenn Farne owns?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, that's a good segue into the next slide where I'm going to talk about the flow of funds. And I will not be able to give a direct dollar amount, but I can give you an indication of how the funds will flow. And that, I think, will help as we evolve this conversation through the session.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
Can you give a rough estimate? Is it $100? Is it $1 million? Is it $10 million? Is it $1 billion?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair.
What is the value of 8-Star Alaska?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. I won't do that, and I'll explain why.
Explain why.
I'd like to explain why on the next slide, if I may.
Before you move to the next slide, I just wanted to follow up on something you just said. Not just said it before Senator Kawasaki's question. You stated we sold 75% to Glenn Farne. What did they pay for that?
Senator Giesel, Chair Giesel, they made the commitment to take the project through to FID. So this is something that we had valued at around $150 million.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to slide number 6 now.
Madam Chair, again, yes. Frank Richards for the record. I think that we will likely advance a couple slides to get to the chart that Matt is talking about. So with the committee's indulgence, we'll advance to slide number 11.
All right. Slide 11 for the public who are listening.
So here we have the same picture of 2025 that I just showed in the last one, just to compare it with what happens after FID, or really at FID. So at FID, 8-Star Alaska LLC is going to raise capital for, let's focus on the pipeline. So they're going to raise capital for 8-Star Pipeline LLC. They're going to do that by selling down their equity in 8-Star Pipeline LLC. And obviously, you'd want to minimize the amount of capital that you have to put out for that funding in order to reduce the amount of equity that you transfer in exchange for maximizing the amount of capital that you bring in. This is where now, with the structure we have, Glenn Farne and ourselves are aligned. So if Glenn Farne wins, the state wins in this regard. We would hope that the developer would try and, dilute or divest of the least amount of capital. And I'm going to throw just some imagine type numbers out there. Imagine that they were able to sell down 70% of the equity in 8-Star Pipeline and keep 30%. In that 70% that they sell down, we as AGDC have reserved the right to invest up to 25% with a minimum of 5%. But on the 30% that is retained by 8-Star Alaska in 8-Star Pipeline, you'll also receive in the future, after commercial operations, remittances, dividends from 8-Star Pipeline. And the funds that flow from 8-Star Pipeline to 8-Star Alaska LLC, AGDC will receive 25% of. And that's a non-dilutable right to that 25%. That doesn't change. So as of right now, even if there are no other investments, we would still receive 25% of whatever flows through to 8-Star Alaska. And whatever flows through to 8-Star Alaska is going to be dependent on what I've shown here as your XX percent versus your YY percent. Your YY percent is what you have to sell down in order to raise the necessary capital to build the pipeline. And your XX percent is what you keep. Now, I'm going to talk about some of the unknown variables.
Slide 12 is more appropriate.
Yeah, slide 12 has a bit more on this, but before we go to slide 12, just some of the variables on this. So we're working on debt, obviously. You've heard the developer talk about working on debt. You've heard the Secretary of Energy making some comments about debt. You're not going to know what the capital requirement is for the equity investors until you know what that debt is. So boom, one huge variable that we just don't know the answer to yet. Then the next one is, what are you actually going to have to sell down? What is your XX percent that you get to keep after taking into account that debt? And that's a huge unknown right now. So I think we'd be really doing everyone a disservice to start indicating any type of money. What we want to indicate is, where is the developer right now? Where are they in the scorecard of getting to this point of FID.
Senator Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you. I just want a little clarification here. Did I hear you say that we would get 25% of 25%?
What, Senator Rauscher, through the chair.
Is that what I heard you say? I just want to know.
Yeah, Senator Rauscher, through the chair. What I'm saying is we would get 25% of whatever that XX percent is. So if 8-Star Alaska keeps 30% of 8-Star Pipeline, then any of the money that flows through in that 30% to 8-Star Alaska, AGDC will get 25% of. And on the next slide, I actually show that graphically.
Other questions on this slide?
Yep.
Senator Kawasaki?
Sure. You mentioned the capital participation at the 5% to 25%. If the state of Alaska, when would the state of the Alaska be obligated to pay for the 25%?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, first of all, I want to be really careful about using the word obligated. So this is an option. This is not needed. This is just purely for us to exercise or not to exercise. And it is structured as a back-end right. We have a whole slide on that. I'm tempted to either jump to that slide or go ahead and show more on how the flow of funds works. Chair, what would you?
I think it's a pretty straightforward question. Is there a time frame in which that option can be executed? I believe that is your question.
That's right, Madam Chair.
So after FID, we would have 6 months to back into it.
Senator Kawasaki.
So before we came down here to Juneau, originally 8-Star said FID would be in January. I don't know, that date has been pushed off. So there could be a decision point here really quick that FID could be tomorrow, and then we would have 6 months from tomorrow to come up with cash.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, that's correct.
Oh. Get a checkbook.
So, Mr. Kissinger, is that 6 months written down somewhere?
Chair Giesel, yes, that is, and that's also in those agreements.
Gotcha. So we could see that written down.
Chair Giesel, again, that's in those agreements. And so, you know, putting those agreements or any part of those agreements out there requires our partner's approval.
Sure. And redacting the sensitive information. But 6 months shouldn't be sensitive. You just stated it publicly.
Chair Giesel, that's right. We have said that part, and we had permission to say that part. Yep.
Very good. Further questions? Senator Wilikowski.
All right. Just want to make sure I understand this. So if we nothing else happens, let's say Glen Farm goes out and finances it 100% themselves. Unlikely, probably never going to happen. But let's assume that that's the case. The project gets built through this current funding mechanism. We would get 25% of whatever profits flowed.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, that is correct. And it's slightly nuanced. Well, there's more to it. And that's so I'd like to go on to the next slide in order to walk through those flows.
So that would be slide 12, I believe we're getting to. Senator Klayman, did you have a slide or a question specifically on 11?
Well, it's part related to 11, but part looking at one of the earlier slides where I think it's slide 6, it says Alaska's 25% minority owner not obligated to provide future funding to maintain ownership.
Correct.
And then I'm listening to this discussion and looking at slide 11, and all this seems to suggest there comes a point in time in which we have to, if we want to keep our interest, we have to put in money. And I'm just finding, looking at slide 6 and hearing this discussion about putting more money in, that seems to be in conflict.
Senator Klayman, through the chair, I've somehow not clarified this for you, because there is zero requirement for us to put in any further funding. If we wish to participate in the sub-projects at FID, that's an option for us. And of course, that would come with additional funding. If we don't want to, and I'll show this on the next slide, the two comparisons, if we don't want to, we still will get our 25% of anything that flows through to 8-Star Alaska.
Follow-up,
without any further funding.
Senator Klayman.
So you're saying if we don't put another dime in and this whole project goes forward, 25% of any profit the whole operation makes is coming to the state?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, any profit that flows through to 8-Star Alaska. So 8-Star Alaska is going to sell down equity in 8-Star Pipeline in order to raise the capital for 8-Star Pipeline. If it sells down 70% of the equity in 8-Star Pipeline, it would only receive 30%, 100 minus the 70%, of any of the funds that flow out of 8-Star Pipeline once we're in commercial operations. If they have to divest more, then we would have less. If they divest less, then obviously we would get more in that case. Is that clear?
Senator Klayman.
Not completely, but go ahead.
All right. We'll move on to slide 12.
All right. Not sure this will make it clear, but it's hoped that it will. So we have a side-by-side comparison here without further investment. So this is your scenario that you just laid out, Senator Klayman, of we don't put any more money in to the actual project. Glenfarne, Alaska, as the project manager, they're going to go out. They're going to find the other investors. They're going to bring those investors into the pipeline. They're going to sell down equity in the pipeline to do that. Whatever they retain, and they're incentivized to retain as much as possible, whatever they retain, we get 25% of. Just that simple. We don't have to do anything else, and it's a non-dilutable.
Did you have a question, Senator Klayman?
No, not.
Go ahead and proceed with the sub-project investment, the other side of the slide, I assume you want to cover as well.
Sure, yes. So with sub-project investment, you are going to have these other investors coming into, again, let's focus just on 8-Star Pipeline. But AGDC has a right to invest between 5 and 25% of that. So let's say we choose 25% and somehow it gets funded. And we invested that into the pipeline, we would now still own that 25% of 8-Star Alaska. So anything flowing from 8-Star Pipeline up through that green line that goes up with the $2 signs on it, we'll get 25% of. But we would also receive, in this case, 25% of whatever flowed down to the other direct investors in the subprojects, because we would be one of those direct investors in the subprojects.
Senator Wilikowski.
Okay. I think I'm starting to understand it, but I have the same question as Senator Klayman. Okay, so assuming Glenfarne 100% finances it, or themselves, they somehow raise $10 billion or whatever it takes to build the pipeline themselves. So I guess zero financing. And then let's say $1 billion of profit were generated. In that case, nothing else happens. They get 75% of that. We get 25% of that. We get $250 million.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, if I've understood you correctly, then yes, because they would have funded that all through the subproject. And they would do it by divesting ownership in that subproject. So again, whatever gets retained, we get the 25% of. They would be a direct investor.
And then
follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
If they got somebody else to invest $500 million, then we're out that $500 million. Whoever invested gets their share of that. We would then get 25% of whatever revenues generated from the other $500 million.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I'm not sure I follow you.
I'm not sure I follow it either, quite frankly. It's very confusing.
Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Just really quick question. So the ACC, what is the ACC again? Is that just the facilities, not the LNG facilities, though?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, that stands for Arctic Carbon Capture. Oh. It's also noted as gas treatment plant. In fact, in all of our permitting, it's known as the gas treatment plant. Just an important point on that gas treatment is in order to turn methane into a liquid, you have to remove all the CO2 because CO2 will turn into ice before the methane turns into liquid. So this is not done for any other reasons other than you have to do it.
Follow up, Senator Kawasaki.
Thanks. And then the underpinnings of this 8-Star Alaska LCC, LLC are the ACC or the gas treatment, the pipeline, and then the LNG. If one of those things doesn't get built, what happens to the 8-Star LLC?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, all three of these are integral parts of a single project. And in fact, they are all just one project. We have broken them into these sub-projects because you do have there are different kinds of scope. And so they could attract different investors. But at the end of the day, the LNG plant consists of a liquefaction facility in Nikiski, an 807-mile-long pipeline up to the North Slope, and a gas treatment plant on the North Slope. And that is all one facility.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Klein.
So, if we look at the without further investment, AGDC, there at some level on behalf of the state, owns 25% in 8-Star Alaska. And that's the dynamic if there's no further investment from anybody. And so the pipelines presumably probably don't get built unless Glen Farm puts a bunch of money in.
Senator Klayman, through the chair. So I drew that this way to just not have the noise of the other investors. You know, obviously, if there's no capital coming into this project, it doesn't get built. So the other investors are still down there. There's just not the green line flowing through over to AGDC.
Senator Klayman.
So then we'll turn to with sub-project investment. So AGDC owns 25% of 8-Star Alaska. But if say, an outside investor comes in for 8-Star Pipeline and wants to put $500 million in, Alaska or AGDC then has a choice. Then do they put up to 25% into 8-Star Pipeline or do they not, correct?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, that's exactly right. So we would be able to back out $125 million of that $500 million. So another investor came in with $500 million. 25% of that, it's $125 million, if I'm right. And so we would have the right to back that other investor down to $375 million, and we'd contribute the $125. That's exactly how it works.
Follow up,
Senator Klayman.
But should Alaska choose not to put in that $125 million, then where we sit in that scenario is we own 25% of 8-Star, but we own 0% of 8-Star Pipeline because we have chosen, for better or for worse, not to spend that $125 million. And so our effective ownership at this point has been diluted because we did not make the investment.
Senator Klayman, through the chair, that is correct. You would still retain your 25% of whatever 8-Star Alaska retained in the pipeline. So assumedly, when we raised that theoretical $500 million, you're exchanging equity in 8-Star Pipeline for that.
Follow up, Senator Klayman.
If I'm looking at it from a standpoint of this mythical other investor that's got ready to put $500 million into 8-Star Pipeline, from that entity's perspective, they would actually prefer that Alaska didn't invest because they get more equity interest in 8-Star Pipeline by putting the full $500 million in, and Alaska not having, or AGDC not have any interest in that. We gain nothing from 8-Star Pipeline, and it just becomes a question of what gets returned from 8-Star Pipeline to 8-Star Alaska, of which we have 25%.
Senator Klayman, through the chair, they may feel that they wish they didn't have to do that, but they have to provide us with that option on the 125 in this case. They have to offer us the option within a 6-month period to exercise to come in and sort of back into 25%. So that would back them out and we'd basically replace them in that 25% role.
Senator Klayman?
But from the AGDC / Alaska perspective, as the project goes forward, if I'm following these slides accurately, we will be regularly confronted with this question about, do we invest? And if we choose not to invest, which is our choice, we're left with 25% of H-Star Alaska, but in the whole project picture, we will gradually dilute our interest either because we choose not to invest or because we lack the cash to invest, which either one of which could be true. It might be a strategic decision we don't want to buy in because we don't think it's going to make sense. We could say best investment ever, and we don't have $125 million. Either way, the structure has great potential over time unless Alaska is really in position to continue to invest and invest and invest. Our interest in the overall structure will diminish over time if we don't invest.
Senator Klayman, through the chair, that's exactly right. Every time they raise capital, we are offered that 25% back in, right? And there will be multiple tranches of raising capital. There's pipeline phase one. There's potentially some gas treatment plant within phase one. Then there's your phase two, where you're going to have gas treatment plant, more pipeline investment, and LNG investment. And those will all be separate.
If I may.
So the legislature holds the appropriation authority. So it feels like the word we and AGDC are getting kind of used interchangeably. Though sitting at this table, I believe we understand to be the legislature. So investing 5 to 25% as an option is a determination this legislature would make as the appropriating body. Is that how AGDC views it as well?
Madam Chair, again, for the record, Frank Richards, absolutely correct. You are the appropriators. You are the policymakers. What we're trying to identify here is of the 5 to 25%, it's not – we've tried to put in place the option for Alaska to include the Alaska legislature, but also Alaska corporations, Alaska Native corporations, and ultimately Alaskans to have the opportunity to invest in this option that we've retained in the project. So to Senator Klayman's example, if the state chooses not to invest – for whatever reason, the option will also be provided to Alaskans and those companies to be able to make that decision themselves. So it's not totally reliant on the state of Alaska to make that decision. But certainly we're coming forward to try and represent what we've retained as the ability should the state want to invest or Alaskans want to invest.
Matt Kissinger, for the record, that's a really important point, because if you go back to ANGPA, so the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline Act of 2004, and then later the enabling legislation for AGDC, both of them have this intent to provide an opportunity to Alaskans to invest in the project. So within ANGPA, there was the intent of Congress language that was exactly that. And within the enabling legislation for AGDC, there's the uncodified statute or the uncodified law that states that we should provide this to Alaskans. So we are working on an opportunity not only to provide, you know, this option for the legislature to make the decision, but for everyday Alaskans too.
This sounds pretty convoluted when I think about the fact that the state of Alaska owns the subsurface resources, owns the gas. And the legislature acts as the owner of that subsurface entity, whether it's oil, here we're talking about gas. So what you're suggesting here is that some of that subsurface could potentially go to other entities other than the state of Alaska.
No.
Chair Giesel, no. This is only investment in surface infrastructure. This has nothing to do with the resources at all, other than the resources pay to transit down this infrastructure. But this is not taking any sort of upstream ownership or title or equity in any way.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you mentioned other Alaskans, other Alaskan corporations that could invest. Does that same six-month timeline apply?
Senator Myers, through the chair, yes, it does.
Okay. And then
– follow-up, Senator Myers.
Yes, thank you. So let's say ASRC or you know, Joe Brown down the street decides to invest some money, is that then standard equity stock, so he could go ahead and, you know, that stock could then be sold on ahead to somebody else, including somebody out of state?
Go ahead.
Senator Myers, through the chair, this is going to become increasingly more clear, but as of now, it is not going to sound extremely clear.
but a little worried about that, but okay.
Well, so AGDC has this right, and you wouldn't extend that right to individuals anyway because of the governance issues it would cause. But just for clarity, AGDC has that right to make that investment. What we will do is we will form a company off to the side, this AGDC asset company, and people will invest into the asset company, and AGDC's returns from each of those investments will flow through contractually into the asset company. So as we go to raise this funding from people, go to provide this opportunity, you would have a standard prospectus. You'd understand what rates of return and what risk levels you'd be taking on, and you can elect to invest based on that information. But you will be investing in this asset co off of the side of AGDC.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. I think I'm starting to understand a little bit, but is it fair to say that we gave up 75% of the project, we keep 25% of the project, but we only get to keep that 25% of the project if nobody else puts any equity into it, and if they do, we also match that. Is that kind of a rough representation of where we're at?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, there is no situation. So without further investment, I didn't show the other investors, but there's no situation where you don't have a tremendous amount of other capital coming into the project because we have to build the project.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
So we really don't have 25% of the project. There's no circumstance where we just get 25% of the project because we invested $1 billion over the years and gave that work product to Glenn Farn, we could effectively get nothing for this.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, again, what we will keep is 25% of whatever 8-Star Alaska is able to retain in each of the sub-projects as those sub-projects are capitalized.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski. Senator Klayman. Pardon me. My mistake, Senator Kawasaki was next, then you, Senator Klayman.
I'm happy to wait.
Thank you. Just more of a question about this 25% that the state would be backed into. And on that slide, it mentions, or actually it's the next slide, I guess, mentions the other corporations and Alaskan businesses. And you're saying that at some point after FID, these businesses, corporations, and individual Alaskans and the state would have to figure out whether they'd like to buy in. And then at that point, the cash would be owed. Is that correct?
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Maybe advance the slide to slide 13, to which Senator Kawasaki is talking about.
We're moving further and further away from some slides that we've skipped, which have some pretty important information in them. But to address Senator Kawasaki's question, slide 13.
Yeah, so Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, that's exactly right. So the investors will be lined up at FID, and then we'll have 6 months to back in. And once we decide to back in, that's when we would have to put the money in.
To clarify, thank you, Madam Chair. You're saying the state of Alaska would have to decide, the legislature would have to make that decision, and then be able to afford a cash call of potentially, if it's just the pipeline side, $10 billion divided by 25% of $10 billion, $2.5
billion? No.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair. So as I talked about all the variables that we don't know yet, the first one I identified is how much debt the project will have, and that's a huge one.
Okay.
So it's 25% of the equity that has to get raised. So if you had a $10 billion pipeline and you funded it by 75% debt, you'd have $2.5 billion, and so we'd have 25% of that.
Okay. So Okay. Still a lot of cash.
Yeah.
Okay. And then have you as a entity figured out or given us advice on where to find that cash in case we do want to retain that 25% fully, wholly?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, no, we have not. Certainly that's the role of the legislature, knowing the fund sources that you have available to you.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. I now go to Senator Klayman.
So on this optional equity participation from Alaska businesses, Alaska individuals, this is a place in which if the state, as I understand the description, somebody puts, we'll keep round numbers, somebody wants to put $100 million into 8-Star Pipeline, and so the state's option is to come in at 25%. So the state could put in the $25 million, and that would mean that the other investors now back to $75 million, they get $25 million back. If the state instead chose to only put in $10 million, this means other Alaskan entities could choose to put in the $15 million and basically push that $25 million back to the investor. Have I got that right?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, this is where a lot of options come out, because the state could even underwrite and then allow Alaskans to back in. And that would provide perhaps more time for Alaskans in the 6 months. There are a lot of ways to structure, a lot of tools we could use.
Follow up, Senator Klayman.
So now I'm in the place of, let's use the example that Senator Myers referenced. ASRC is interested in investing. We'll just make it one investor. They want to put in the $15 million the state is not going to put in. They're not publicly traded, but they have all kinds of disclosures as a corporation. Do they get to look inside the papers and see all the details about how this operation is put together as a private investor? Do they get to see all the details that we as the legislature don't get to see?
So, Senator Klayman, through the chair, what they'd be seeing is the structure around 8-Star Pipeline. So they would not necessarily see anything around 8-Star Alaska. 8-Star Alaska to them would just be another owner of 8-Star Pipeline. They would see, and in the corporate documents for 8-Star Pipeline.
Follow up,
Senator Klayman.
I'm working on the assumption that for 8-Star Pipeline, if I asked you, give me a copy of the documents for 8-Star Pipeline, as a member of the legislature, your answer says, no, that's confidential, you can't see it. And is the structure in this optional equity participation, if the legislature is putting in $10 million and ASRC is putting in $15 million to 8-Star Pipeline, ASRC gets to see the corporate documents and the entire structure, but the legislature is not allowed to. Have I got that right?
Senator Klayman, through the chair. Again, so those that governance is not formed yet for 8-Star Pipeline. And so I can't say what those confidentiality provisions are going to be under 8-Star Pipeline. But if you're going to bring an investor into that structure, you're going to have to show some information. That would primarily come through a prospectus.
I won't ask, but I would just note, it sure appears to me, Madam Chair, that every step along the way, the state of Alaska's ability to find out anything that's going on is very, very limited. And in contrast, ASRC in the same setting, because they could enter into confidentiality agreements and they wouldn't have to disclose that publicly, they would be able to see the very inner workings of these businesses that haven't even been formed, but one could reasonably figure that they will have the similar confidentiality provisions that 8-Star Alaska has. And the notion that we will suddenly get to see underneath the engine doesn't seem likely.
Thank you, Senator Klayman. I do want to pause for a moment and recognize that Senator Kelly Merrick has been with us since the beginning of the meeting, and I thank her for being present. Follow-up question, Senator Wilikowski?
No, I think Senator Klayman articulated it perfectly.
Senator Myers.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So, at the risk of jumping around slides again, on slide 12, you had mentioned this AGDC asset company. I'm assuming that hasn't happened yet, as the vehicle through which either the state or other Alaskan investors could invest into these projects. Is that something you can do internally, or is that going to require some enabling legislation from us?
Madam Chair, with your indulgence, I'll switch back to slide 12.
Sure.
Thank you. Through, Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, through the chair, again, the entity that you see here, AGDC Asset Co., is a subsidiary that's already been created at the direction of the board of AGDC. So that exists right now. And that was the legislature, when they created us, gave us the opportunity to essentially have subsidiaries.
Okay. And
follow up, Senator Myers.
Yeah, just to clarify, as of right now, I believe the plan is to have FID by the end of March, if I understood correctly. So then we'd have 6 months from the end of March. So that would put us until the end of September. So if I came to you guys in June and said, hey, I've got, you know, 20 grand of my own money, I want to invest, we don't need to do anything here as a legislature. I just come straight to AGDC to do that. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, yes, you are correct. That is the structure that we are, again, ultimately developing, as Matt described, a prospectus that we'd be able to share with interested Alaskans. And the goal is to essentially, as Matt described, is ring fence this for Alaskan investment. So the state, corporations, and citizens.
Okay, thank you.
You know, I think one of the difficulties here, frustrations on the part of the legislature, is the term Alaska, the benefit of Alaska, and including the legislature, and yet AGDC has made all of these decisions, signed an agreement with Glenfarne, but we, the appropriators, can't see it. That's pretty weird. But let me ask this. Let's say this doesn't go forward. Are there reversionary provisions in the terms you've agreed to with Glenfarne as far as the assets that you have given to them?
Chair Geisel, I will not give any details around that, but yes, there are. And this is one of the main reasons why these agreements are so confidential.
Thank you. Follow-up, Senator Klayman, Senator Klayman. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. AGDC Asset Company, is it a corporation, an LLC? What's the business structure?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, we're still working on that.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you finish the work and there's a business entity of some form, will the structural documents, the organizing agreement, if it's an LLC, will that be available to the legislature, or will that too be part of the trove of secrets?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, so that would be 100% owned by AGDC. We would have no problem. We have no prohibition against providing that.
Thank you.
Senator Wilkowski.
Is this project still under the auspices of Senate Bill 138?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, yes. Senate Bill 138 modified Alaska Statute 3125 with certain provisions, and so we live under those provisions.
Follow up.
So there's all the requirements in Senate Bill 138, requirement to have an open season, for example. Those are all still live?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I don't recall the open season requirements, except for the in-state project that we originally talked about. When we were created for the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project, we were looking at solely and specifically a line that would bring North Slope gas down for Alaskans' use, and so there were provisions in there for an open season. I actually had one, and there was actually subscriptions.
Senator Wilkowski.
Is there a requirement for an open season with the construction of phase one?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, no. Right now, this structure, as Matt described earlier, this is this project was authorized under Section 3 of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, Section 3 of the Natural Gas Act, with the agency being the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
So in light of that, I believe you've made it clear that those three boxes on the bottom the gas treatment plant on the North Slope, otherwise referred to as ACC, the pipeline itself, and the LNG facility are a single project. Is that correct?
Chair Giesel, that's correct. They all comprise one project that was all provided with a Section 3 authorization under the exclusive jurisdiction of the federal government.
So we've also been told that there's a Phase 1 pipeline. What you have just told us, there's no open season. You're going to, Glenn Farn has stated that they're going to buy the gas at the wellhead from people that have signed on to sell them the gas. So if an additional company comes on with some gas and they want to put it in the pipeline, how will they do that? This is a private pipeline now. They've contracted with companies to carry that gas. Will they decide to open it up now to a new company? How will that be managed?
Chair Giesel, it really depends on where you are in the life of the build-up to the project. So right now, Glenn Farn would just enter into negotiations with that party. If the pipeline's full, then you have to work on, A, is there demand on the downstream side? And B, is it economical to expand the pipeline in order to provide this? What we do have are the Alaska Advantage Principles. And the Alaska Advantage Principles are more about delivering gas to Alaskans. So we have the assurance that the first sort of 500 million standard cubic feet a day, which is more than twice what we use now, is reserved for Alaskans. And further, that they have to expand to accommodate Alaska growth.
Follow-ups, or excuse me, Senator Wilkowski. Yeah,
thank you. Well, on that point, what is the process that governs how capacity up to 500 MCF is allocated among in-state users? And in the event that demand exceeds this amount, who decides which Alaskan entities are prioritized?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, so if you were to exceed it, then you would trigger the expansion clause. And so, assumedly, because this is all on long-term contracts, it would be first in the door maintains their position, because you're not entering into 2-3-year contracts. We're entering into 30-year contracts right now. And for phase two, I would assume they're going to be 20-year contracts at the very least. And so you can't back out someone of a 20-year contract. If the pipeline's full and you have it full of people with 20-year contracts, then the only alternative, if there's the demand for it, is to expand the pipeline.
Senator Wilkowski?
Will AGDC or Glenn Farn submit proposed tariff structures for in-state delivery to the RCA or the legislature prior to FID?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, it's hard to see why they would provide that to the RCA, because, again, this pipeline is under the exclusive federal jurisdiction. So there are maybe gas sale agreements, and I'm not an expert on RCA. But I do understand the regulatory framework for this pipeline, and it's a federally regulated pipeline.
It's a federally regulated project.
Correct.
If it were just a pipeline, the scenario would be different.
Chair Giesel, that is also my understanding, that you would then fall under the either contract or common pipeline carrier provisions of Alaska statutes, but this is not one of those pipelines.
According to this structure, whether it becomes a single pipeline or not remains to be seen. Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, on that point, we had the RCA here, and there appeared to be some confusion about their role in this process. And is it your position that they have no authority to protect ratepayers or consumers in this process?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I did not say anything about their duty to protect Alaskan ratepayers. What I said is that they don't have the authority to regulate rates on the pipeline. I'm not an expert in RCA, but they do have gas sale agreement provisions and other ways to protect Alaskan consumers. But when you just come down to the rate regulatory framework of this pipeline, This pipeline is part of the Alaska LNG project, and so it's under the exclusive jurisdiction of the federal government.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
We heard from the RCA that a certificate had to be issued by them before construction began. Is that your understanding of how this process works, or do you have a different interpretation?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I just keep reiterating that this pipeline has a FERC authorization to site and build, and it's under the exclusive jurisdiction of the federal government. Section 3 of the Natural Gas Pipeline Act addresses, I believe, what you just laid out, the construction of the pipeline. So I don't know why there would be any other step.
Senator Wilkowski.
Has FERC issued a notice to proceed for construction activities, or is the project currently authorized only for pre-construction work?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, FERC authorized the pipeline, or the project, the Alaska LNG project, as Matt described. With that, then, the project needs to complete its work to be able to present to FERC what are called the term is escaping me, implementation plans. So these are plans that are presented to FERC to identify, yes, we are meeting the obligation that we had said of all of the compliance actions that you asked us to do. Meaning, let's say we're looking at cultural resources. All the cultural resources has been done and updated. And we provide that to FERC. Those implementation plans are a series of steps that the developer will present to FERC, seeking then that notice to proceed. So the initial implementation plan request went in by Glen Farm several weeks ago and is now being reviewed by FERC, ultimately for the initial phases of the phase one project, the early works.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
Is the project relying entirely on the 2020 FERC final environmental impact statement? And can you confirm that no supplemental EIS or additional NEPA review is required before construction begins?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the FERC environmental impact statement that was published in 2020 is the document that we are relying on, which has gone through federal court action and been upheld by the U.S. District Court in D.C. For the FERC, not only for the FERC authorization, but for the Department of Energy authorization. There was subsequently a supplemental environmental impact statement done by the Department of Energy looking at the export authorization. When the Biden administration came in, they said they wanted another look at it. They concluded that supplemental environmental impact statement and published it. So that is also on the docket. And there was subsequent court actions about those authorizations, and they've run their course as well in the U.S. District Court. So all of the legal actions in the federal courts have been taken, and the project is continuing to move forward on those authorizations.
Follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
Is there any federal, state, or local environmental permits required for construction, that, or are there any that you have not yet applied for?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I would say that there are some tactical state permits that the project must get, as well as there are some tactical local permits, meaning local jurisdictions that the project must get. For instance, Title 16 fishing game permits for crossing anadromous streams. Those project permits are, you apply for them in a sequence so that they don't time out. So you want to make sure you apply for them so that you're getting the authorization to go and work in that area with Fish and Game's concurrence, and you're using that permit at the time of the construction. But if we had applied for them in 2024 and not started construction until 2026, they would have timed out, so we would have had to reapply. So that's why we're calling them tactical permits. And Glen Farm is putting together that program of permit applications for the state and local jurisdictions.
Further questions? Yes, Senator Wilkowski, then we'll go to Senator Kawasaki.
Has the project received Clean Water Act Section 404 and Section 401 approval for wetlands and water crossings, and has formal Endangered Species Act Section 7 consultation been completed for the entire route?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, yes, you are correct. We received the EPA permits and the state certification of that Clean Water Act and then the Endangered Species Act, as well as marine mammal protection
And the 404
permit, yes.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
Has government-to-government consultation with all affected Alaska Native tribes been completed, and are there any unresolved objections or consultation conditions?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, yes, there were government-to-government consultations, specifically through the cultural resource permit process that was led, again, by FERC, including not only the federal agencies, the local tribes, but also the state of Alaska and through the Office of Historic Preservation. So that work is done. The cultural resource efforts, again, were main not a challenge, but a large amount of work had to go forward to make sure we went through that process correctly and came out with approvals.
Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. So I care about this pipeline being built. I think it's jobs for a lot of people, things like that. But we really do care about the gas to Fairbanks issue. I think we talked about that a lot. But are those same permits that are required of the large line also already received for a gas line that goes between Fairbanks and wherever the closest pipeline exit point was?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, Senator Kawasaki, my apologies. Let me start again. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, we'll call it the Fairbanks Lateral. That was work that AGDC initiated when we were doing the Alaska Standalone Pipeline Project, because the legislature actually gave a specific direction to include that lateral in our design efforts. So we had concluded some of our permitting process with that. But again, that work was completed back in 2014. So unfortunately, those permits are no longer valid. So any work that's to be done on a lateral going to Fairbanks would need to apply. But again, it's a fairly straightforward route. It's up and over Murphy Dome. The minimal, if any, impacts to wetlands following along the DOT right-of-way, likely little cultural resource implications. So we think it's going to be fairly straightforward. When the developer, and if I recall, we talked about this in committee maybe last year, that AGDC has signed an MOU with an Alaskan pipeline company to take on the development of that project and move that going forward. They're waiting for the final investment decision on the main line to be able to make that decision.
Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Because we have under Senate Bill 138 the 500 MCF of gas offtake at a max I don't think Fairbanks would need that necessarily, but at the point in which the large line has to move over to the lateral line, does that impact the volumes that go further down the line? And what impacts do those have? I guess you would need to know that because you're projecting for Fairbanks taking its share first, right?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there will be what's called an interconnection point. This is essentially a junction or a T that will allow for gas to flow from the main line into the Fairbanks lateral. You'll have to likely reduce the pressure because, again, the main line is going to be probably operating at 2,050 PSI, and the lateral will likely be significantly less pressure on that. So the offtake will be fairly de minimis flow for Fairbanks. When this project was fully flowing gas to meet the 20 million ton LNG production, we're talking around 2.7 to 2.9 billion standard cubic feet a day flowing down that pipe.
Just one last on
yes,
that.
Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Would it be necessary for added compression along the route? I guess maybe you answered that question.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, on the initial phase of the project for Alaskans use only, there will be compression solely on the north slope, and then the gas will free flow down, including a lateral potential into Fairbanks, and then free flow all the way down to south central Alaska, because we have to meet the operating spec requirements of the pipeline system that we're going to be concluding at, and that's the NSTAR system. So the pipeline will be designed to flow the volume of gas to be able to meet the inlet pressure and composition requirements of NSTAR.
And then just, sorry, one last question. Under Senate Bill 138, there were potential for 5 offtake points. Have there been any other movement with any of the other potential buyers on or shippers on the route? Like, I think it was talked about at the Yukon River Bridge, and then probably somewhere further south of Fairbanks too.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, you're referring to the construct when Senate Bill 138 was when we were working with the producers, and they were limiting it to 5 offtakes. So when we were given full ownership rights, we essentially did away with that limitation and said if there are as offtake opportunities and there's commercially viable entities that can contract for that gas coming off it, then we will provide for that interconnection point. So right now there's Fairbanks. There's for the full project, there's the offtake on the west side of Cook Inlet and on the east side of Cook Inlet, and then potentially now one for Donlin Mine that has come forward. But we know that certainly the National Park Service and other communities along the path are going to want offtakes, but we're not in negotiations with those right now.
Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Is this current project delivering what the 2014 legislature intended when it passed Senate Bill 138 in terms of risk, control, in-state benefits, transparency, or has the project morphed into something materially different that needs updated legislative direction?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, again, as I stated at the beginning, the major change that we saw from the original project that was being executed under with partnership with BP, ExxonMobil, and ConocoPhillips was that there was a full equity participation. And so with that, then the state, through Senate Bill 138, was looking at taking on that risk of cost overruns and execution risk. As I stated earlier, we looked and following, again, the recommendations coming from Wood Mackenzie, we shifted then to the project finance and the tolling structure that we saw was being used quite effectively on the U.S. Gulf Coast to produce LNG projects. And with that, then, what we've described here today in the construct of 8-Star Alaska, we feel that we have, by bringing in a private sector developer, and giving the state of Alaska and its citizens the option to invest as an opportunity, but not an obligation. So the risks, though, that we have right now for any cost overruns does not exist because we have not made any elections in those sub-project LLCs that we've been talking about.
Senator Klayman.
Just looking again at the structure, I've been asking questions about the 8-Star pipeline. But on the 8-Star LNG, there's a lot of discussion about 2 different import facilities down on the Kenai, one in Nikiski and one that's redoing an old one and one that's new. Is 8-Star LNG, which one is that?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, it's neither of these. Any import facility is outside of this. Those assets will be transferred and have to be transferred to the LNG facility once a pipeline is completed. But until then, that's a separate development outside of this structure.
Follow-up, Senator Klayman.
So does that mean at the end of the pipeline, the expectation is there'll be yet another place where gas can be stored to load onto ships that's not even in discussions in other forms?
Senator Klayman, through the chair. So the import facility that Glen Farm talk about is just simply a pre-build of the Alaska LNG export facility. So they would just be pre-building the jetty, the cryogenic line, the loading arms, et cetera, so that instead of sending out LNG, you can bring that LNG in. There will be one stranded asset, and those will be the vaporizers that turn the liquid back into gas. That's a fairly small element to it. Those are truckable module type size elements. The rest of it is all going to be used for export. Now, obviously, it can't be used for export until you have a pipeline in place. So until such time as there's a pipeline in place, they're allowed to be used for import. But once a pipeline's in place, then they need to be used for export.
Senator Klayman.
So that means the non-Nikiski, the proposed gas facility that's not the one at Nikiski, Glen Farm would build it as an import facility And then when the pipeline connected to it, it would become an export facility. Is that the one we're talking about?
Senator Klayman, through the chair, so the only one that I'm aware of that Glenn Farn talks about is the pre-build of the Alaska LNG facilities in Nikiski.
Do you want to clarify that, Senator Klayman, with which yeah. one that is?
Yes, please. Which one is that?
That's the one that's permitted as part of the Alaska LNG project.
Greenfield.
Greenfield, south of the Nutrien plant, if you're okay. familiar with the area.
Sure. I just wanted to follow up.
Senator,
so this
Senator
is the, Klayman. This is the... This is not the existing plant in Nikiski being redone. This is the new plant, new import-export facility.
Senator Klayman, through the chair, that's correct. That was the beauty behind this, is that you're not having stranded assets. You're just simply pre-building something you're going to use later for the exports. Okay. Thank Provides you. An insurance policy.
Okay.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Glenn Farn, in a recent FERC filing, said that they expected FID I think February 4th or February 6th, and then a couple weeks ago. And then they also have expected to start laying pipe in the ground in December of 26. Is that still the expectation?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, that is the expectation that they put, that the developer puts out there. We hear what the developer says around FID targets. I know that as a developer, you sometimes need to be setting these targets to drive a lot of people in the right direction. You've got the loan application process. You've got the process with Worley. You've got a lot of you've got the upstream producers that you're trying to get contracts with. So you need to set some firm deadlines. The reality is that FID is not something you just put a stake in the ground and go, we're going to FID then. FID is an outcome of a lot of other movements. So if we can go to slide 9, please.
With the chair's
slide 9, moving back.
Trying to get these ones we've missed. So slide 9, this is what we're looking at when we're rating the developers. Are they moving forward on the objectives that we agreed to when we came together? And are they moving towards an FID? Are they diligently developing this project? So we have upstream gas supply agreements. You saw there was a press release about this. There were comments in there from Exxon and Hilcorp, as well as from Conoco, who did not have a GSPA yet, but has you know, obviously talked about their support for the way the project is moving at this point in time. We already had one, a GSPA, with Pantheon. So now there's sufficient gas for phase one under these GSPA agreements. Now, they do need to be moved to final definitive agreements, but price is agreed, term is agreed, liabilities, take-or-pay provisions, these are all agreed. So we've never seen that happen. Downstream, you have the gas sales LOIs with NSTAR and Donlin Gold. NSTAR, an anchor off-taker. Phase one, we always felt needed, you know, an additional demand. And so now Donlin is stepping into that role. But I know that Glenn Farr are also working all the way up and down the pipeline trying to grow demand in Fairbanks and in other places. Because obviously the more demand there is on that pipeline, the lower cost of gas for Alaskans in that phase one. Feed, they're done with feed on the pipeline. This is probably the biggest one. We've waited for this for a long time. Excuse me. A class two cost estimate on the pipeline. That's what we have now. We've never been close like that. That gives you what you need to then start the financing talks. They've also chosen an EPCM contractor with Worley. Worley did a great job on feed, and so they're well positioned now to be the EPCM. You have the actual pipeline construction companies appointed for each of the spreads. And not only that, but you also have two-thirds of the pipe supply already under contract. And I know that they're working on the remaining third. So this is what we're tracking as AGDC, as the minority partner, in making sure that they are truly moving the project together. And we're not as concerned with stakes in the ground that they put to drive the project.
Madam Chair, if I may add.
Please, for Mr. Richards.
Frank Richards. The point that Matt just made about feed, this is something that we talked to the committee about and to the legislature. This was really our ultimate goal in looking to bring in a developer to cover the cost of feed. And we were putting that at nearly $150 million. I know from previous hearings that you had, I think Gaffney Klein had some consultants talking to you about the level of effort on this project, the engineering, the progression of that, and the level of completion. So completing FEED was a major milestone for Glen Farm. Getting to that updated cost estimate by coming in and getting those price quotes from suppliers and contractors is far beyond where we thought we were going to be at a class three cost estimate. So they are making great advances in moving this project forward. And as Matt said, under our role as the state's representative for in the minority ownership role, this is what we are observing, this is what we're monitoring, this is what we're making sure occurs.
Sure. Senator Wilikowski. So,
as you know, all the utilities on the rail belt are scrambling for natural gas. And they're faced with the choice, the dilemma of do they go ahead and make multi-year lengthy agreements for importation of LNG? We wait for this line. I mean, what is your confidence that this line is actually going to be built? What would you say to Chugach Electric, MEA, Golden Valley? What would you say to them as you're on a scale of 1 to 100 with 100 absolute certainty and a 0, it's never going to happen? What's your confidence interval this is actually going to get built and they don't need to go ahead with an import LNG?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I put my confidence level at 98%.
Further questions? All right. We have 4 minutes left. Is there another slide, another point you would wish to cover?
Madam Chair, again, I'm sorry that we bounced around, but we felt it was very important to be able to talk about the structure. Many of the slides we have talked about in our conversation.
We can end with just putting slide 8 back up.
All right. So the Alaskan Advantage Principles, we've presented this previously, but these were the guiding principles for us in our negotiations with Glen Farm to be able to look out for the interests of Alaska. So as they progress forward with the project, we wanted to make sure that they establish and maintain an operational presence in Alaska. They are doing that. They have an office. They are hiring people within the state of Alaska. They're hiring Alaskan contractors and moving this project forward. The interconnection request from Alaska. Again, we have part of the design put in the interconnection point specifically for Fairbanks as well as South Central Alaska, and we'll look to provide the interconnections for other Alaskans that are commercially able to accept that gas and pay for it. We got and received the priority right for the 500 million standard cubic feet a day, which is more than double of our current demand, to be able to allow Alaska to be able to entice industry to be able to come in and be able to use what we hope is low-cost gas that will then, you know, create more economic opportunities for the state of Alaska. And if there is such interest and it goes beyond the 500 million, that there will be capacity through expansion of the project. And when we talk about that, that's initially it's compression on the pipeline, but if it's at the full volume flows, it means expansion of the entire project. So from conditioning of the gas to compression on the pipeline to liquefaction, if that is one of the offtake opportunities, or if there's something like a data center or a mine, then we'll be able to make sure that there's gas flowing down this project. And then lastly, it's the opportunity to use differential rates to be able to help move this project forward to maximize the flow of natural gas for the project and ultimately to achieve the lowest possible gas for Alaskans and Alaskan utility customers.
Thank you. Senator Wilikowski? Yeah.
Based on what you know, what is the expected price of gas to South Central for from this project delivered to consumers right now?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, there's two answers to that question. The first one is on the phase one, and I believe that I heard Mr. Sims from NSTAR quote a price of about $16. Second answer to the question is when the gas is flowing at the full volume and producing 20 million tons, Alaskans will be receiving the gas at nearly $5. So a significant reduction because of the volume discount.
Follow up.
We got 30 seconds. it will take some time between phase one and phase two, and the consumers will be paying a much higher price in Alaska. Do you have some sort of a rebate plan or some sort of plan to so that those who paid those high tariffs in the early years maybe get some sort of a rebate or get their money back so they don't bear all the costs of the upfront tariffs?
Through the chair, if with your indulgence, I move to slide 13.
Slide 13.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, again, the throughput for initial phase one will be the low volumes that Alaskans have. You know, there'll be a ramp up from what Cook Inlet is not able to supply to when Cook Inlet is no longer able to supply. And so those rates are at that $16 level. But when Glen Farm has, I believe, said publicly that when they take final investment decision on the full project, then those rates will drop from that $16 down to that $5. So there'll be hopefully a very short period of time when those high rates are being paid by Alaskans.
If I may add, Matt Kissinger for the record, Senator Wilikowski through the chair. Those FID days are far in advance of commercial operations date for the pipeline. And so it's our hope, and it's certainly how this all came together, that your phase one cost is hypothetical. That's your worst case scenario, and it's are you willing to bear that to have this insurance policy in place so that Alaskans, per capita, we have the second most amount of gas in the world after Qatar people. So we have a tremendous amount of gas, and this is our insurance policy to make sure that we are attached to that. But the reality is if this comes together as it's designed to, you would never pay those phase one costs.
Yes, Senator Myers.
Just to note that given the prices that the gentlemen were just quoting, I believe the current price in Fairbanks is about $24 right now. So if 16, it'd still be a discount.
Senator Kosaki, or excuse me, Senator Wilkowski.
And it's, I think, about $10 in Anchorage, so it'd be a significant increase for us, significant decrease for them.
But Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, you would notice that the newest contracts out of Cook Inlet are significantly higher than that. And so we're not moving in the direction of lower cost right now. We're definitely moving in the direction of 16 to 20 anyway.
And yet you still talk about it as two pieces. Phase one, you yourself are quoting two different prices here. Mm-hmm. So the idea that this is a single project still escapes me. But we are at the end of our time. You know, you talk about AGDC carrying the interest of the state of Alaska, and yet we are the elected body from that state of Alaska, and we are being denied seeing the financials. This is a very different project. It's a completely different project than the one that we had under the leadership of ExxonMobil, where we saw all of the finances. So I still feel that Bill 138 actually does not apply to this at all. It was never imagined that it would look like this. But you have agreed to carry forward our request for a redacted copy of the agreement you've signed with Glen Farne. This will not be new to Glen Farne because I met with Adam Prestige last week and made this same request. And he said that he would take it forward also, a redacted version. So we look forward to hearing and seeing that. So at this time, this concludes our meeting. The next meeting will be on February 25th. Senator Myers?
Yes, Madam Chair, very quickly. So another one of the documents that was forwarded to the committee today was a summary of state spending on natural gas pipeline project. That document referenced a legislative research report dated January 2025. The number was 25-068, and I was wondering if we'd be able to get a copy of that report.
You can certainly request that.
Okay.
I think you as an individual can request it from Ledge Research.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. So back to the fact that we are now adjourning the meeting. The next meeting will be Wednesday, February 25th at 3:30 p.m. At that time, we will be having a presentation on mining updates by the Alaska Mining Association, NANA, and the University of Alaska Fairbanks Critical Minerals Accelerator Program. So at this time, the meeting will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 5:04 p.m.